Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
This.
What are you doing that stupid trickery crap for?
Is Felger and Mass.
The continued ish.
On 98.5.
I just want to see what the fuss is about.
The Sports Hub.
So I'll probably hate it.
All right, welcome into Felger and Maz, another day without Mike. Back in the a-hole chair, what can I tell you? Nonetheless, we keep the traditions here at 98.5 The Sports Hub, and we keep them on the Felger and Maz Show. Agenda-free Friday will remain true to its core. Paul Perillo is alongside filling in for Jim Murray, presumably, but he's here to help out. Matt McCarthy here to give us headlines. 617-779-0985 is your number. Jimmy, as we like to say, release the hounds. Release them. Release the hounds. Agenda-free Friday. You guys know the drill here, Perillo? Paul Perillo, you know
not
the drill?
Not really, but I'll go along.
You don't know the drill in Agenda-free Friday?
Don't you worry
Matt
about
McCarthy,
me.
You know the drill, right?
I know the drill.
Okay, well, everybody offers an opening thought, and then we go right to the callers discussing anything they want to talk about here in this. And obviously, we will recap many of the things that we touched on this week. But let's... So Matt, since you know the format, you go first.
All right, here's what we learned last night, Maz. Your Yankees, they're in trouble. They are in trouble. That was a winnable game. It was the most winnable game of the series for the Yankees, and they just puked it away. Have the Red Sox had anything like that fourth inning from the Yankees last night, like that this year at all? No, they haven't. Have they had anything like, say, the Sanchez situation from a few weeks ago? No, they haven't. This Yankees team is coming apart at the seams. Their starting pitching sucks. Judge is hurt. Sanchez is on the DL because he's hurt. We all know why he's on the DL. It seems like the division is slipping out of the Yankees' hands. The Red Sox have an opportunity to put this thing away this weekend. They take 2 out of 3 this weekend. They're 7.5 up. 52 games to play for the Yankees. Do you think this Yankees team is good enough to erase a 7.5 game deficit with 52 to play? From what I've seen from them since the All-Star break, they're 6-6 since the break against some bad teams. I don't think they're good enough.
That thing last night was an ass-kicking.
Disaster.
What a complete ass-kicking. Holy crap. And look, we'll get to the Red Sox, I know, because I was hearing it from fans on Twitter last night. I get some emails from people, too, because everyone thinks that I'm somehow rooting for the Yankees, and I'm not.
You're Yankees, Matt.
And so, look, the Red Sox have an opportunity here this week, and there's no question, to grab the division by the throat. Paul Perillo, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with the Patriots, because obviously that's the team that I cover, and I know the best. A lot of talk about the training camp so far and how it hasn't been great, and I'm here to tell you that all of those reports are accurate.
Attaboy, Paul, way to go.
It's been somewhat lackluster, but just because, you know, I don't need to repeat what a lot of other people have already talked about, the intensity and all that stuff, but there have been some things that have stuck out to me on a positive side, and I am sunshine.com after all, so I'm going to focus on some of those. First and foremost, Stephon Gilmore looks like a totally different person than the one that went to training camp last year. He's still a quiet, reserved guy, but he's absolutely dominant every single day. And I don't care who he's covering. It can be Edelman, you know, smaller, shiftier guy in the slot. It can be Hogan, a bigger guy in the outside who can run. And it can be some of the more physical guys in between. He dominates. So that's one really positive sign. I was a little worried about how Butler's departure would sort of put it all on him. You know, obviously he had a lot of pressure last year coming in with that contract, but it's all on him now. He looks like he's up to the task. Furthermore, bunch of guys, you know, real quick, Dwayne Allen is a guy that no one really remembered last year, thought much of last year. He's really played well. He talked about taking all the responsibility, not being prepared last year. He looks like a different guy. Dietrich Wise, a rookie, another guy, really looks like he's playing on a different level than he was last year. So there are some good things going on, too.
Okay, so I heard Bertrand and Zolak say on the midday show that the two best guys on the field have been Gilmore and Cordarrelle Patterson.
Yeah, those, I don't know about the second one, but I totally agree about the first one.
But everyone seems to be unanimous about Gilmore, and that it looks like maybe the second year has made a difference, and maybe the Patriots have learned a little bit more as they did last year on how to use him. Because it feels like he's a pretty much a straight man-to-man guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what you get, you're going to get a lot of that in training camp, obviously. A lot of one-on-one work.
Okay, so since Matt McCarthy touched on the Red Sox and the Yankees, more the Yankees than the Red Sox, and we'll get to plenty of Red Sox today. Because, again, that game last night, ass-kicking. What an ass-kicking. The Yankees, frankly, get embarrassed. But that's not where I want to start. I want to start with the book excerpt, the second book excerpt that came out in the book by, I can't remember the first guy's name, Sherman?
Casey Sherman.
Dave Wedge of the Herald. And, you know, the most recent report came out that, and I'll read this to you directly from our website here at 98.5, and the lead to the story is NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell allegedly offered New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady a way out of his 4-game suspension during Deflategate, according to 12, the inside story of Tom Brady's fight for redemption. And that's the book written by Sherman and Wedge. And the deal was that Brady would not serve any suspension and only pay a $1 million fine. But he would have to say publicly that John Jastrzemski and Jim McNally had purposely tampered with the footballs and thrown those guys under the bus. Brady declined, and so obviously we all know what happened after that. I want to read you from the actual book excerpt because I think there's a little bit of a something that's been lost in translation here, but I'm going to read you directly from the book excerpt, okay? The sports world was stunned, and Patriots fans decried the commissioner's so-called witch hunt. Behind the scenes, Brady and Demoris Smith tried to negotiate a settlement with the NFL, which would allow Tom to play the first 4 games of the upcoming 2016 season. The quarterback even offered to pay a $1 million fine, but Roger Goodell wanted more. He demanded that Brady state publicly that former Patriots equipment guys Jastrzemski and McNally purposely tampered with the footballs, even without his knowledge. Tom said no. Quote, "There's no way I'm going to ruin these guys for something I believe they didn't do," he told Smith. Now, look, a couple of quick things here. Okay, because again, the way the story is being portrayed is that Goodell made the offer. Brady made the offer, and this is consistent, Brady and Demoris Smith. This is consistent with some of the stuff that was coming out during Deflategate at the time, that they were trying to broker a deal, that Brady was willing to take some punishment, but not all of it, but Goodell wanted him to admit guilt and Brady wouldn't do it. In fact, what Goodell wanted was for Brady to identify team guilt. Because let's face it, if he identifies Jastrzemski and McNally, he's throwing the Patriots under the bus. He's saying they did it. And then the question becomes, well, what do these guys do it on their own? Mm-hmm. Who authorized them to do it? So it either points the finger at Belichick, it points the finger at Kraft, at all the above, not to mention the fact that two average Joes who just work there and do what they're told would get thrown under the bus. So look, Tom Brady's been in the NFL 20 years. Here's what I'll tell you. To me, there's nothing more impressive than this part of it. Taking the bullet, and not just for the team, but taking the bullet for Jastrzemski and McNally. So look, I get on Brady all the time, okay? And I think that he's become a diva, frankly, a pain-in-the-ass diva. But I do admire the fact that a guy will stand there and say, no, I'm not going to blame someone else for something I don't think they did, just so I can play 4 football games, okay? I'm not going to do it. So he served the 4 games, and he won the Super Bowl anyway, by the way. They won it anyway. And you know how someone, you know how you can really judge someone's character? When they have power and they have leverage and they know not to use it. Because Brady could have used it there. And he could have thrown a couple of average Joes under the bus, not to mention the team. So I've heard a lot of people say, like Mike Hurley, formerly of CBS, or still with CBS, but we used to work with him, and obviously we lost him in the merger. But I've heard Hurley say, well, this proves Brady's innocence. No, it doesn't. It doesn't. Brady still might have known. Brady still might have been involved. Brady became a scapegoat in this whole thing. And the more this, you know, the more we go back and revisit, the more and more I firmly believe it. But he wasn't about to blame someone else so that he could play 4 extra games.
Right. I totally agree with your whole take. I don't think it necessarily proves anything in terms of innocence, but I think it is an example of him doing exactly what you said. He's not going to just put it off on other guys. And I do think that he honestly believes that there was no wrongdoing. I think he honestly believes that.
Yeah, I honestly, Paul, I don't know what he believes or what he doesn't believe. And I don't know. I mean, I believe that they were doing something down there with the footballs.
No, but I think he believes that whatever was going on is just common practice.
But what I do know is that Brady went to the league and said, look, let's broker a deal. And they said, well, we can broker a deal if you blame someone else. And he said, no.
That's admirable. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I admire that. However, would that deal have helped Tom Brady?
No.
Not at all.
I believe it would have been an admission of guilt.
It is. And that's the key there. Brady didn't want the admission of guilt. And an admission of guilt from Jastrzemski and McNally, or at least putting the blame on them, that still comes back on Brady. Oh, so your two low-level equipment guys were doing this, but they weren't doing it for you, Tom? How would that deal have helped Brady at all? I mean, it's great that he did the admirable thing, and I'm not trying to take away from that because, you know, again, I admire what he did. But it's not like that deal would have been great for Tom Brady either. Let's at least acknowledge that.
No, I agree.
The million-dollar fine, you mean? Or that admitting the guilt?
Admitting the guilt. Okay. He would have paid
the
fine.
Don't you believe that? I mean, if he pays the fine and two other guys get blamed for it, okay, well, maybe Brady isn't necessarily blamed, but there's an admission that this was going on. And then you get into once you admit that it's going on, what rational thinking man would say he didn't know anything about it?
But again, it says here in the excerpt that Jastrzemski and McNally purposely tampered with the footballs even without his knowledge.
Right,
but who's going to believe
saying,
that?
In a court of public opinion, who would believe that he didn't have any knowledge?
Okay, so that's fair. That's fair. And again, I just think that to me, this to me is something that I have admiration for Brady.
And he had an opportunity and he didn't take it. And I agree with you. That's there's an admirable quality.
Okay, so this is my only point. And maybe this is a little bit of a crusade on my part, but I used to work around teams all the time, or one team in particular, the Red Sox. And there were a million people that work around that ballpark that the success of the team matters greatly for. Okay, it's their livelihoods, whether it's equipment guys, clubhouse guys, ushers, whatever else. There are a million people that work around that ballpark who can get thrown under the bus at a moment's turn. So the playoff shares might not mean anything to the players. They do to the equipment guys because it's life-altering money. So when a guy like Brady will actually say, no, I'm not going to throw those people under the bus, thankfully he did it that way. It really, when you get down to it, I don't know how much of a thing it is to celebrate, because he'd really be a dirtbag if he did throw those guys under the bus, really. But nonetheless, they were trying to broker a deal, and Brady wouldn't go to those lengths, so I give him a little bit of credit for that. 617-779-0985. Big win for the Red Sox last night. Did you hear me, Red Sox fans? Big win for the Red Sox. Big. Now they just have to do it two more times. That's all. Two more times.
You are unbelievable.
We're off and running on Agenda Free Friday.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bradley and Betsaboyd. They are shoehorned in to Fenway Park tonight. Comebacker. Bradley caught. Now he's racing home to throw the tag. He got in there! He scored! How did he get in there? Wow!
He's a dead duck right here.
Well, he's out by 7 feet.
Well, he got caught in no man's land there, and he made a decision. They threw behind him, and he took off. So he went from a bad base running play to a great slide, and brought energy to the stadium, to the dugout. He's such a good athlete. And he reacted to it, and he made a decision, and it worked for us.
How about that play last night? How about that one in that fourth inning rally by the Red Sox? Before we get to that, let me just say quickly, Agenda Free Friday is brought to you by Planet Fitness. The world judges they don't. PlanetFitness.com. We will adhere to the rules of Agenda Free Friday, even with Felger and Murray. Al Paul Perillo, Patriots Football Weekly, is alongside, as well as Matt McCarthy, who's here to give us headlines. So that play last night, Bradley gets hung up.
Yep.
The pitcher, Jonathan Holden, right? I think is the guy.
Holder.
Holder.
I think.
Okay. What would a holder? I think you're right. Yeah, Holder. In any case, Bradley starts to go back to third. Holder throws to third base. Bradley makes an unbelievable slide. I mean, really, fabulous slide. Place goes bananas. They score the run. So let me ask you guys quickly one question. Is that a great play by Bradley or a bad play by the Yankees?
It's both. It was an unbelievable slide. You can't take the slide away because there's not that many guys. The way Cora said it, too, you know, how good of an athlete Bradley is, that's true. So you can't take that away from Jackie Bradley because I don't think a lot of other guys doing the same thing would have been able to beat it anyway. But that's a play that if one of my pitchers on one of my Peabody Little League teams makes, I'm taking him out. I mean, what's the first thing you go over when you do that?
You run at the runner.
You run right at him and make him make a choice.
In fact, you run at him in a way that pushes him back to third base.
You always try to angle him back to the base he's coming from. That way, the worst thing that happens is everybody ends up back where they started. That is horrifically bad fundamental baseball. To throw the ball that soon, that far away, and give him even a chance. Now, again, don't take anything away from Bradley because the slide that he makes, there aren't that many guys that are going to be safe, even with that blunder that... Was it Holder?
Holder. Yes.
Not many guys are going to be safe, even with that blunder.
Matt, good play by Bradley or bad play by the Yankees?
It's a bad play by both. How do you end up caught up in a rundown on a comebacker to the pitcher? Bradley bailed himself out. He got bailed out by Holder by throwing to third base. Great play, great, you know, athletic play by Bradley. But my God, how do you end up in a rundown on a comebacker to the pitcher with the infield playing back? You got to hold until the ball gets after the pitcher. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. I love that. It's a bad play by both.
It is
the kind of negativity that I'm looking for.
Tony. That's Felger and Maz.
Oh, that is beautiful. That's a beautiful thing. We got to work on
these bucking for a promotion.
So we got to work on the tone a little bit, Matt.
Uh-huh.
Like
it's a bad play, Tony. It's a bad play.
What's
he doing?
What is he doing, Tony?
A little bit better.
I mean, in all seriousness, Bradley bails himself out. That was a spectacular slide. But he shouldn't have been in that position in the first place. And I wouldn't make such a big deal out of it if the Red Sox didn't consistently do stupid crap like this on the base paths. Once again,
What you should do, Mike.
Thank you, bro. Gee, attaboy. Look, from my standpoint, what a crap bag play by the Yankees.
Awful.
Holy crap. You get a guy in a rundown and you let him score in the big leagues. Anytime you're in a rundown, you should automatically be out.
I don't know who you should throw, Mike.
Any guy who escapes a rundown in the big leagues, it's on the defense.
The whole team sucks.
It's on the defense. And I want you to listen closely to Cora's answer on this. Okay? And then we'll get to the calls. But I want you to listen closely to Cora's answer. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Well, he got caught in no man's land there, and he made a decision. They threw behind him, and he took off. So he went from a bad base running play to a great slide and brought energy to the stadium. To the dugout. He's such a good athlete that he reacted to it and he made a decision and he worked for us.
It went from a bad base running play to a great slide. At no point did he say that Bradley made a great play because he knows that Bradley screwed up.
Red Sox are ruined.
Yep. Well, I wouldn't go that far, Roachie. I'm actually feeling better about him right now. So they get two more this week, and as Matt said, the division is theirs. That's what I think. But that play by the Yankees, oh, my God, that's so horrendous. Whenever a guy gets out of a rundown, it's on the defense. Yep. It's on the defense. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, what a horrendous play. And that Holder guy had the second worst relief appearance I've ever seen in a big league game. I mean, that one was up there. Let's get to the calls. Alex is in Connecticut. Alex,
the
what
way
do you
can't
got?
Tease us with that. What's the worst?
Second worst?
Okay, I'll get
Come
to
on.
It. Go ahead, Alex.
Hey, so I don't have anything on the Sox. I don't have anything on Tom because I feel like at this point with the Tom Brady situation, it's like that thing that your significant other keeps bringing up, like a fight you had 2 years ago, and you're like, are we still doing this? I do have a problem, though, and I've been losing sleep over it the past couple of days.
I'll tell you what, Alex, you know what? Sit tight. I don't like the direction this call's going. It's Agenda Free Friday, but I meant to start with this guy. Jeff's in a car. Jeff, go.
I want your story.
Jeff, go. You there? Jeff! Oh, God, he hung up. He had a great point. If Brady had taken the deal that he offered to Roger Goodell, if they had come to that and he had ratted out Jastrzemski and McNally, Jimmy Garoppolo never would have played.
Oh, for God's sakes.
Jimmy Garoppolo never would have played. It's a good point, though. Jimmy Garoppolo never would have gotten on the field. So I just thought that that was a worthwhile point. Since I cut this guy off, let me bring him back, and then I'll tell you the worst relief appearance ever. Alex is in Connecticut. Alex, go.
All right, so I was getting to my point here. In 2006, on the Raiders, Moss had 553 yards. 2007.
Alex, you got to go faster. What's your ultimate point?
Do you think that Dez Bryant could do this?
No.
What Moss did come in.
Because I don't think Dez Bryant's problems in Dallas were effort related, and I think Randy Moss wasn't trying at the ending in Oakland. I think that's the difference.
So you think Dez Bryant is deteriorating?
Yeah, I don't have any problem with taking a shot and bringing him in. They're in dire straits. They don't really have a wide receiver core right now. You know, with Kenny Britt out, Jordan Matthews gone, they need some bodies. They're taking a shot on Decker. I'm not sure that's the answer, but I have no problem with the signing. And I have no problem if they wanted to double up. And I see Ian Rappaport is reporting that is it Kobe Hamilton, I think, has been in town for a look-see as well. So they clearly need some more NFL-caliber veteran receivers to come in because they don't have enough. I have no problem bringing in Dez Bryant, but I also have no illusions of what you're getting. You're not getting a Randy Moss rebirth with Dez Bryant. He doesn't have that left.
Rick is in a truck, wants to talk about the Tom Brady book that's coming out. Go ahead, Rick.
Hey, Perillo.
Yes, what's this guy's name?
The excerpt from the book, it talked about Brady going off on DeMarcus Smith in the very beginning of the book.
DeMarcus Smith.
Yeah. Do you think that if things start going south this year, say in the first four games, there's going to be a breakup in these first four games between Brady and Belichick?
Well, I still don't think that the relationship between those two is great. I don't know what stage it's in. They're so secretive down there. I think it's certainly workable. I don't expect there to be issues to the point where it's manifesting itself on the field. I still think that last year there were times where it wasn't good and they just kept winning. And I would expect that to be the case for the most part. No, I don't expect it to blow up to the point where Belichick is going to be thinking about making moves or whatever. And quite frankly, he doesn't really have the options to do that now.
Yeah, I mean, to me, look, there have never been two better people at being able to compartmentalize what they do. And so if it shows up, Paul, if the strain on their relationship shows up, if the cracks show up, to me, it'll come during a time of the year where they're having a tough go of it. They're not playing well. Maybe Brady's frustrated with the offense, something like that. And then maybe Bill makes a bad coaching decision akin to 4th-and-2 in Indianapolis that year, and all of a sudden Brady looks at him and goes, oh, here we go again, the genius.
Right, and you look at it from two perspectives. If you want to get real snarky, and no one can do snark like I can. If those kinds of scenarios unfold, Tony, right, and you get a situation where Brady's maybe not playing all that well, and Belichick says, go figure, you missed the whole spring, and you're not as sharp as you might be. And, Brady maybe is sitting there saying, well, just this offense isn't really executing to the maybe if you got me a receiver or two and, you didn't leave me with...
Amendola, no Brandon Cooks. You traded everybody
and, and then you expect us to just completely keep it rolling. So both sides have that ability to snark one another and cause problems. I don't think anything like that will happen, but you could understand if things weren't going smoothly, the potential for something like that, because those are two ready-made excuses for each side.
Yeah, and to me, Paul, it wouldn't even necessarily come out publicly.
Oh, no. We would never find out that kind of bickering was going on.
I would just say that Tom Brady be standing there muttering under his breath, here we go again. What are you going to sit Butler on the sideline again, Bill? Is that what you're going to do? We're going to get to big games, you're going to make bad decisions because you're smarter than everybody else and you're a pain in the ass? Like, to me, that's how it would manifest itself. But I have to say, in the last couple of days, I want to get your thoughts on this, too, that it feels like Belichick is making an effort this camp to try to be a little bit more player-friendly. Player-friendly. So we'll get Paul's thoughts on that. And, yes, I will tell you what I regard as the worst relief appearance of all time. That guy last night was right there, though. Talk about the silver medal.
He gave it a run.
Holy crap, did he suck. Well, have you ever seen a guy completely melt down and screw up everything that... I mean, could you have made more mistakes on the mound than that holder guy made last night for the Yankees?
Maybe a balk. Other than that, could have balked in a run.
No wild pitch, no pass ball. Well, the pass ball wouldn't be on him. No wild pitch, no balk. Good point by you.
The strive for perfection continues.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Making sense of Boston sports.
There's no catching and no throwing. Anyone can play, no matter how hopelessly unathletic they are.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, The Sports Hub. At the end of your ride home, you'll be all caught up.
If you get suspended again, you're going to miss playoff time, or you're going to miss time in the playoffs.
Or questioning your judgment.
Sorry I brought it up.
Felger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Tom turns 41 today. I'm sure you know, you talked about it briefly the other day. Looking back, could you ever have imagined this kind of longevity from him, playing so well at 41 back when you were starting to get some good success with him in the early 2000s?
Yeah, I mean, look, in 2003, I was worried about 2003. In 2006, I was worried about 2006. Right now, I'm not thinking about 2028 or whatever year it is. So it's not really the way I look at it. So we'll take what we have and, you know, look at, you know, a year, next year, you know, that kind of window. I mean, think about a player, you know, where some player on our team is going to be 10 years from now is not really part of my thought process, to be honest with you. Not at this time. We can look back, but at this time, I'm not thinking about getting a player ready for the 2029 season. I mean, just not thinking about that.
So that wasn't really the question, Bill. It wasn't the question. No one was asking you whether you're getting a guy ready for 2029. The whole point was, it's Brady's birthday. Did you think you'd still have him at this stage? Well, I'm not thinking 10 years ahead of time. That's not the point. It's not the point. I don't know. Maybe that one strikes a nerve because of the whole Jimmy Garoppolo thing. Who the hell knows?
Everything gets back to Garoppolo.
Okay.
You.
Well, look, I just think it's a monumental decision. Monumental, Paul. Like, talk about a fork in the road for the franchise. Belichick recognized the importance of it. And so he wanted to keep Garoppolo. I don't blame him. I felt that way all along. I thought it was the right move, which you know. But I'll tell you quickly, what I'm sick of already, and I've been sick of it all week, I knew it was coming, is the Brady birthday crap. You can take that and shove it. I couldn't give two craps about Tom Brady's birthday. I knew he was going to turn 41. Like, newsflash, like, we didn't know it was coming. So, look, I understand it's a convenient opportunity to take stock of Brady's career. Belichick clearly didn't want to go there.
It's an impressive cake, though. Check it out.
Okay, so you know what? The stuff that was going on down there today, they had a big inflatable of Brady. They had a cardboard cutout of the GOAT, as people can see on the simulcast, that fans were signing. I guess that was the equivalent of like a big birthday card. And you said they had some. Oh, there it is. That's the massive 12 cake.
Yep.
You had a piece of that, Paul?
I did. I ate the whole one.
I'm not surprised. Who are you kidding?
Right before the Dunkin' run.
You ate half the two.
900-pound cake.
Yeah. Paul ate 450 of the pounds.
No, I couldn't put the two away. I could only eat the one.
Yeah. Paul says the
Who
one.
Who got more, him or Bedard?
The two was bigger. He had part of the two.
No, Andy Hart and I had a piece at 9 o'clock in the morning.
So the Brady birthday thing is getting covered everywhere. I really have no interest in the Brady birthday story. I don't. I just not. It doesn't do anything for me. But the dynamic between Brady and Belichick and all of that, I think, is of interest to all of us. In the last couple of days in camp, I asked Greg Bedard this yesterday. I'd be curious to your opinion. You know, the Isaiah Wynn thing with the punt on Monday night, I guess that was. That right. Happens every year.
They do that a lot, yeah.
Okay, but the thing yesterday where
I don't remember seeing that a lot.
Okay, so the defense was given a chance to have two plays to play offense.
Yeah.
While the offense played defense.
Right.
So Tom Brady was actually playing safety. Trent Brown was the nose tackle. Patrick Chung was playing quarterback. I mean, just wildly out of character. What does it tell you?
Yeah, I do think that they heard some of the criticism in the offseason from outside the organization about a lack of fun. And, you know, in Cassius Marsh's case, I guess, inside the organization. And I do think that they took that into consideration when they put things like that together. Bill was asked about it a little bit today, and he talked about there was a challenge offered. And, you know, I assume that there was some talk, you know, because the defense has really played well in camp. They've definitely had the better of things for the most part during camp drills. One day, I think they went four for four, keeping them out of the end zone from the 1 yard line. So
that was Sunday.
I wonder if there was, maybe some trash talking going on a little bit. It's been quiet. And I know Greg was talking about this yesterday with you guys. It's definitely been lackluster, and the intensity has not always been present at these. Something like that might liven it up a little bit. And, you know, I think it did. I think there was a little bit of extra juice there. They had some fun with it. But I do think some of that criticism. I don't think that Bill just decided, let me just change everything that I do, all the ways that I do things, I'm going to change because I'm going to show these guys. But maybe he did say, you know, maybe we could lighten it up a little bit and have some time where it's just not all work for these guys and still find a way to succeed. I mean, they've developed the best program in football for 20 years. I don't think two plays doing something like that is going to change
that. I mean, it's a really small concession, right?
Right.
I'll be honest with you. I'm surprised Belichick's doing it all.
It was cool. It was a cool thing to watch. Now, they did it about as far away from everybody as they could, so you couldn't really see it. But yeah, it was pretty fun.
Tank is in Lemonster. Tank, what do you got?
Okay. You remember August last year, around this time, you were making predictions with the Patriots? I wish Felger was here for this call.
Yeah, I think I was saying that they were going to go undefeated.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was. And no, seriously, I don't know if you're making fun of yourself.
What else is there to talk about in August?
So what's your point? But Tank, what's your point?
The point is, what's the predictions for this year?
Well, I haven't gotten there yet. I haven't thought that far ahead. You know, only a Patriots fan would call up and blame me for picking them to go undefeated. Like, you say the most positive thing you could possibly say about
it. Oh, that bothered a lot of people.
And they still get their panties in a bunch over it.
I mean, not the least of which is your buddy, Jim Murray, would get really upset. You know, when we talked about going undefeated, as if talking about it was going to prevent the Patriots from winning the Super Bowl somehow.
Yeah, you jinxed the Pats, Tony.
Yeah, I'm superstitious. Blair's in Maine. Blair, what do you got?
Don't think too far ahead. The Pats haven't even started the season yet. Okay? So don't think too far ahead, Maz. Think too slow.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, I guess we get all the wise asses calling today. Is this how this is going
to
work?
Jim Armstrong's doing a stand-up in front of Gillette, talking to fans. Some booze bag comes over. He's like, 16-0! And even my buddy I'm watching the game is, they could do it. Good, cool, awesome. Over my dead body, can I live in that world where we're the middle of December and we're going to be talking about that on a national level?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I don't think they're going undefeated this year.
I don't either. But I can tell you that a lot of times in this business, when you're yakking for a living, you know, sometimes you say things and you sort of get take cornered, as you guys call it. Sometimes you might think something and then someone says something and you get your back up and you get a little stronger than maybe even you anticipated. I can tell you there was nothing fake about Jim Murray's thoughts of going undefeated last year. He came in with us. He ran our pre and post game shows with Andy Hart and I on Patriots.com, and he was terrified.
It's like people have short memories. You don't remember what 2007 was like in the middle of December. The pressure that team had on them, I wanted them to lose at some point. I know that's sacrilege to a lot of fans. Maybe that makes me a bad fan. I wanted the loss going into the playoffs, and I think it's extremely important for them to lose one of these games between now and the playoffs. The only thing that's important to me, Mike, is that Brady and Gronk stay healthy. The important pieces, like Jamie Collins, stay healthy. Get home field advantage and win Super Bowl 50. You grab the trophy from Roger Goodell. Yay. All right. After all the Deflategate nonsense, who's the best of all time? Get the fifth ring. Okay. Yay. And maybe he walks off into the sunset. Or we can just talk about four or five more months of Deflategate stuff come February. I'm good with that. That's what I want. I can't deal. I won't deal with the talk of an unbeaten season. I don't want to deal with it.
I'll tell you what. I can say this about Murray because I would say it to his face. He knows I love him to death. But that man has some serious things going on between his ears.
Oh, God.
And they go
you are
way,
so right.
They go way, way back. Way, way back. Like, I'm not sure I really want to ask because I'm afraid of what I'll find.
I'm saying to talk about it before they kick the football off the first week of the year is insane to me.
Yep. And you want to keep going, Jimmy? Go ahead. Go to get to the money.
You said the first loss this season.
The blue in the face?
I don't even remember that one. I'm not sure what it was. All right, we'll continue with your call.
That's not what I do.
We'll get more of Paul Perillo's thoughts in camp and review some of the happenings of the week. We'll do that next.
Wow. You said the first loss this season.
First loss.
This season?
Yes.
October 2019. Ain't happening. Sorry, Murray. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. Smoke it with all your other funny stuff over there. 29, they're going unbeaten. 19-0, I'm in.
Michael Felger. Tony Maserati. Felger and Maz. Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Junta.
Magenta?
Junta.
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 Sometimes you have to wonder if there's a gas leak in the building.
Woohoo! Whoop-de-doo!
Filger and Mez, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Shot high and deep left field. That is into the monster seats for a home run. That got out quick. Now it's a two-run game. It's a high fly. With his second of the ball game, totally out of Fenway. There's another one.
No.
High deep drive, left field to the monster seats. That's off the light standard. First third home run of the game.
Have a night.
We made the big move early in the season, and we decided to go with Mitch at first base. And it felt that we were one bat on a bench away from being really, really good offensively. Gotta give credit to Dave. He moved quick. We saw something that we needed, and then he pulled the trigger, and he's here.
He is obviously Steve Pierce. Three home runs last night, six RBI, and it is interesting when you think back on it, right? The Red Sox released Hanley Ramirez. They did. They released Hanley Ramirez, and then they traded for Steve Pierce. So Steve Pierce really was acquired to replace Hanley. They needed a righty bat at that time. No two ways about it, particularly on the bench. Pierce was the guy they went after. You know what Pierce is hitting against left-handers with the Red Sox?
Against lefties? No. I'm sure he's hitting quite well against them, though.
500.
Oh, wow.
9 for 18, three doubles, two home runs. So of his nine hits, five are for extra bases. He's slugging 1,000. Against left-handed pitching, and his OPS is almost 1,600. So Pierce was a big part of that game last night. And look, I just think it's, for the Red Sox, a great start to that series. What were you thinking in the top of the first?
Especially the way Sabathia has thrown against the Red Sox, I was thinking they had an opportunity to sort of, you know, just put the hammer down, because I agree with Matt's opening take. I think that they sort of ended it last night. And I know that mathematically that's not the case, but I think the Yankees needed to win game one.
Yeah, they didn't end it yet. What are you, crazy?
Yeah, relax. I think they needed to win game one, the Yankees did, to have hope. And I think that when they had the 3-0 lead right out of the chute, I'm thinking, the way Sabathia's thrown against the Red Sox, they're going to get game one, and here we go. Now we're going to have to fight through this series, and it's going to continue. But then the onslaught came, and that was that.
Yeah, see, it felt to me early on like it was going to be one of those games that ended up 11-8. Now, look, it ended up 15-7, and I'm not rewriting history here. I actually tweeted that at the time, Paul, when they were down 3-0.
Said, I follow you.
I said, no way this thing's
over. I disregard you.
Okay, so to me, it felt like that game was going to be a slugfest right out of the chute last night. Once Gregorius hit the home run early, I went, oh, here we go. And then, to me, Sabathia just didn't look sharp. Didn't look sharp. And the Red Sox were due to bust out, and so, look, I give the Red Sox credit. They, you know, they got down early, they fought back, and they really put a hurting on the Yankees for one night. So it's still about the series as a whole. If the Yankees win the next three, they're right back in this thing, Paul.
Oh, I mean, certainly that would change things. But are you expecting right now the Yankees to bounce back and win three straight in Fenway?
So to me, tonight's the big game.
Yep.
Tonight's the one. The Yankees get Severino
There's
going.
No show on Saturday, Matt, but if the Red Sox win tonight, Saturday would be the big game.
So no, but it's true. Tonight is the big night. The Yankees have their race on the mound. This is the only game of the series where they still have a distinct advantage in the pitching matchup. You can make what you want of Price and Tanaka on Sunday night. You have no idea what you're going to get from either of those guys. This is the night where the Yankees truly have the advantage. They had it last night. Last night was the scheduled loss for the Red Sox. The way they've hit Sabathia this year is a good point, Paul. They were supposed to lose that game last night.
Yeah.
Johnson in for Sale. You put up 15 runs and you win that. You win tonight. You steal it from the Yankees ace. Things could spiral out of control for the Yankees in this series. It kind of feels like that team is teetering on the edge. They're 6-6 since the All-Star break. They had the Sanchez thing happen last week. Judge is on the DL. Their manager is a pretty boy buffoon. Like, it seems like they are teetering on the edge here. You can put them away this weekend. I truly feel that way. I didn't feel that way coming into the week. With the way that everything's gone for the Yankees, it seems like the Red Sox can really put their foot on their throats.
I mean, to me, this is a spot for Severino.
Mm-hmm.
He's got an ERA of almost 9 in his last four games.
Yeah, he hasn't pitched well.
The Yankees pitching staff has been smacked around. Sonny Gray 2 days ago. Sabathia last night couldn't come out for the fourth inning. To me, Sabathia last night looked like an old boxer. Like he couldn't come out of his corner for the next round. That was it. He sat on his stool and he couldn't get up. That's how it felt like to me with Sabathia. And so now, but now they're sending Severino to the mound. He's been bad lately. They're reeling. They need him tonight. They need this game. Yankees need the game tonight. Teddy's in Chicopee. Teddy, go ahead.
Yeah, Matt, I think Dombrowski's doing a hell of a job with the players he's been picking up. All of them are producing. And I know you talk about they need a reliever. Look for him to make a big trade in August for the teams that are out of it, and he'll pick one up.
Okay, so Teddy apparently is the president of the Dave Dombrowski fan club. I am not. I would tell you that, to me, they needed a reliever. I don't know how you don't get a reliever at the deadline. And maybe he will pick one up in August. The beauty of winning a game like you do last night is that Joe Kelly, Matt Barnes, or whoever else you want to slap on the mound in the seventh or eighth inning doesn't have to worry about choking because you've got a big lead.
Right.
Right? So none of those guys has to worry. I don't think the playoff games are going to be like that. So we'll see. Maybe the Red Sox will. Maybe they'll pound their way to the World Series championship, and they'll never look back, and that'll be the end of it. But I doubt it. Okay, I doubt it. As for, I just want to close the loop on this, as we like to say, that Jonathan Holder guy. So you realize how bad this guy's relief outing was last night? He faced 7 batters. Okay, they all reached base. Mm-hmm. One of them was on a fielder's choice, which was the Bradley rundown play. But he didn't get an out on it. So every batter reached base safely. He had one walk. He allowed a 3-run home run. They ran on him like he's never been on the mound before, and he made one of the worst defensive plays of all time on that rundown play. I mean, absolutely, positively brutal. Had to be one of the worst relief appearances in history, but not the worst. May 13th, 2000, I was there, Paul. Mike Trombley, the Baltimore Orioles, and I'll make it fast. If Felger heard me doing story time right now, he'd flip out.
Felger's did he walk here. 6 batters?
I like story time. Felger's so not here.
Mike Trombley. Threw 7 pitches. 7. 3 of them were balls, which means nobody could swing at them. Okay? Mm-hmm. The other 4, hit batter, 3 home runs. The Red Sox swung at 3 of his 7 pitches and hit them all out of the ballpark. They were the only 3 they swung at, and they hit all 3 for home runs. No innings, 3 hits, 4 runs, 3 homers, and a hit batter. Easily the worst relief appearance of all time.
Oh, was the hit batter last?
No. I think the home run was last, and then they came out and took him out of the game. Okay. Mercifully, they took him out of the game. But last night, oh my God, that guy was brutal. Talk about a guy who didn't deserve to be on a big league mound, that Jonathan Holder guy. Holy crap, did he suck. Wow. Top of the hour here, no commercials. We're in our longest commercial-free segment. Matt McCarthy will get you caught up on headlines, and we'll continue with your calls on Agenda Free Friday.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.